Absolutely. Don't ever put anybody down for you to come up. That's the worst. And that's definitely not what I'm speaking of. My whole purpose, I was asked the question, what is my greatest fear? And I said, I think about my tombstone. And my greatest fear is not honoring those who held the ladder of success tight for me to walk up while they sacrificed their own leadership, learning, the ability to earn more while I came up that ladder, right? Mm. So it's all about not being selfish, but being selfless. And I want to do as much as I can to ensure that my children, which is inclusive of the local community, are building wealth. And wealth doesn't just equal money, because we hear wealth and we just think about how much money can I get? No, 100%. Wealth is love. Wealth is kindness. Wealth is peace. Wealth is serenity. Like that's what I want for individuals to have.
Hey everyone, this is Matt Wagstaff, and welcome to the Live Long and Prosper podcast, where I discuss a number of topics related to living a life of balance, abundance, and happiness. Much of what I share on this podcast is related to personal development, business, and financial literacy. I hope that this podcast is adding a tremendous amount of value to you, your loved ones, the community at large. And I hope that you will share this podcast with as many people as you know that will add value to their lives. I hope you enjoy this episode.
All right, let's just jump right into it. Get right into it. So again, appreciate you, brother, for being on the show again, taking the time out of your busy and productive schedule to chat with us a little bit. This being Financial Literacy Month. The last time we got together, we talked about a little bit of financial education and some thoughts around finances, especially during COVID. And so excited to hear, you know, what's going on with you, as well as get your thoughts on financial literacy, financial education, and just some habits that others may want to keep in mind as they are trying to get themselves started or even make some shifts in how they view financial education and literacy. So again, this is the second time being on the show, but for those who don't know who you are, Shamar, just give them a quick overview of who you are.
Perfect. Thank you. First, Matt, I appreciate you having me on. Love the work that you're doing. And honored to be here and talk to you and have your guests hear our voices collectively. my name is Shamari A. James, originally from Buffalo, New York, born and raised. Bills fan, of course. Why write? It's part of my drive. You know what I'm saying? If my squad can lose 4 Super Bowls, I can do anything. I'm an industrial engineer by degree. Shout out to Buffalo State College. Also have my master's. I have my MBA from Madai, and then my Lean and Six Sigma certification from University of Buffalo. So glad to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Family man as well. Entrepreneur, all those good things as well. Last time we were on, you were rocking the Buffalo Bills hat. I feel like it was a lot of Buffalo love going on. I think I had a hoodie on and you had on the hat. I think we had a lot of Buffalo love.
For sure.
Always got to represent the hometown. All right, cool. And so last time we spoke, this was in the beginning of the pandemic. I think it was almost about a year to this date almost. It was very close. So yeah. The pandemic had just started. You were in the midst of kicking off a phenomenal project, your school. And so would love to hear you share sort of kind of how that experience has been with launching a school, knowing that the educational system was basically flipped on its head throughout this pandemic, and not only launching a school, a brand new school, and having to maneuver through that process. And so we'll love to hear kind of like what your experience has been like.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. So starting with, we are Equity Now, Inc., charter management organization, founded in Prince George's County, Maryland. I don't ever want to necessarily be known as an urban CEO or a Black CEO, just call me a CEO. However, though, we are one of the only minority-owned and operated charter management organizations in the country. All 4 co-founders are people of color. And I feel that that's extremely big when bringing my voice to have conversations about charter management organizations and school choice to and for the culture. So we went on a journey in 2017 to start Equity Now so we can reach as many people as we could to move forward faster, ultimately for two goals, one of which to do our part to close the achievement gap and also to do our part to close the wealth gap. So what we did, Equity Now started Legends Charter School, LLC. We did an application and 6/6/19, we were approved our application. Thank God, dedication and hard work. we then went out and found an investor and we put together just under a $30 million bond project for a 74,000 square foot facility that would house 600 students, K through eight. But the way the charter law works or the way the charter works, we have a 5-year term and we have K through five, 600 students. And now coming into next year, we will have our sixth graders. So we'll have 700 students next year. But yes, as you said, coming through COVID, we broke ground in March and our groundbreaking, we had probably about 400 to 500 folks that were gonna come to our groundbreaking. And the mayor put out an ordinance that you couldn't have more than 100 people gathered together. So we didn't even really know what COVID was for real yet, but we knew we didn't want to have a negative impact. So we scaled that down, went through our construction completely, and we opened the doors in August of 2020 to our K-5 with 600 students, but they were all hybrid.
Wow, man. And I'm not going to let that just slide by, that whole $30 million bond deal. We ain't going to just go gloss over like that didn't happen, right? So we're talking finances right now. We're not going to just go gloss over that. You know, it was a major move right there. So kudos
to you
for that. That's huge. You know,
the biggest lesson in that, because you hear it all the time when celebrities or other successful folks say it only takes one yes amongst all the no's. But you can't really conceptualize that until you're into it. And Atasha and I, we flew to Vegas on our anniversary, actually, after we had left Buffalo for my mentor, his 80th birthday. And we literally were told no probably 100 times until we finally got that one yes that would be willing to finance our deal.
That's awesome. Well, thank God for the yeses. Thank God for the yes and the no's, because you know that builds that perseverance up. So that's a great story there. And I'm sure there's a lot we could dive into just on like how that was structured, that whole process. And I'm sure quite a few people who want to move to that next level may be interested in. So maybe that's another time we can chat about that.
No doubt.
How are you doing personally in terms of the COVID transition and anything since the last time we spoke?
Good question. Thank you, Matt. If I'm keeping it a stack, I don't have like a conspiracy theory or anything along those lines. But I was, you know, skeptical. I'm a Black man, African-American male that see things that are going on in the news. And it was a little tough when I heard about the vaccination and the things that were going on with vaccination. So everybody in my house got COVID except for my daughter. And it was extremely odd that it attacked what I would say is whatever your health condition is. I have a fairly weak stomach. Like my stomach I eat something spicy and it's a wrap for me. And that's what COVID did to me. It just made my stomach extremely upset. My wife, she gets like sinus headaches every once in a while, every so often. And when she got COVID, it was a massive, congestion and headaches for her. So we were blessed, thank God, that it didn't, you know, it wasn't any worse than that, because we heard some horror stories, but it led me to do my research on this vaccination. And there are a few factors for me. I wanted my mom to be able to come see me without the risk of her getting COVID, but being in health sciences for so long in my career doing process improvement, I just didn't feel comfortable with some of the vaccines that required such a cold chain. Even if I trusted the vaccination itself, do I necessarily trust how it's being handled? So when the Johnson & Johnson one shot came out, I did my research on that one and said it would have to be the right situation for me to get that. So it was. My mom was coming into town. I was able to get the vaccination. The individual that delivered the vaccination is not only a friend of mine, she's also a dean of a college of nursing and allied health sciences and a registered nurse. And I happened to be eating lunch when she texted me and said, you can come get your COVID shot. So everything worked out for me to go get it. So I can't sit here and say that I signed up and I planned to go and I was happy about it. I am ultimately happy with the decision, but we are completely vaccinated in my household. And I encourage others to do their research and do the same, but I can't complain. We're blessed, we're healthy. And I know there's individuals out there who are not and have lost loved ones. So I would never complain about my situation.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that and just kind of being transparent in terms of that process and your thought process. I'm thankful as well that, you know, when you all contracted the virus, that it wasn't anything worse than that. So that is definitely a blessing. So, you know, kudos to you and your family. And so let's, jump into a little of the meat of the conversation today. You know, you are in the education space, are an educator, whether you like it or not, you are an educator and a CEO and so many other things. And so just want to really get from you sort of your take on the definition. Like, so what is Shamari James's definition of financial literacy? So for anyone who wants to get a sense of, like, because we say financial literacy a lot and it can mean different things to different people. I try to outline it pretty simply in my book, but I'm curious about everyone else's sort of thoughts around what that means.
Absolutely. Good question. So if you just break down the word in itself, financial as in finances, and then literacy as being literate or fluent in something, you're an individual who is informed to make decisions with financial resources, financial services, delivery of financial information. However, I think it has become a coined phrase. Financial literacy is cool to say. You see it across the country in different venues nowadays, financial literacy. We're doing this, financial literacy cards, that. So when we were in consideration and having conversations about what we would deliver to our community and our local communities and children and families, I pushed my team to say, to agree that we would push past just the notion or the coined phrase financial literacy, with no disrespect intended to anyone who uses the term and or swears by it. But financial education is the term that we use, because it's not just about financial literacy and being financial literate. It's about the education of it, and then you being able to exercise the education that you have learned. So while those are some, you know, pretty lofty things to say, in the pragmatic sense, what we do is we push, as I said in my aforementioned commentary, is ensure or do our part to close the generational wealth gap. So how do we do that? Our local communities, we're teaching them about banking, about stock investing, about taxes, about sustaining your wealth. It's one thing to come into $1 million and you were financially literate enough to be able to grow your wealth to that $1 million. But do you have a full circle of financial education as far as taxes are concerned to ensure that you're not getting 5% to your dollar or you're overspending as a consumer? What I would say with that, though, is understand where I'm coming from for your listeners. I'm extremely biased. Everybody brings their bias to the table when they're answering questions. I'm an old school long-term investor dude. I believe in investing in the stock market or other investments that you just get into, do your research, put it away, and then one day you wake up and it has exploded for you, right? So having good, savvy financial habits. And that full circle of education is what we teach to children and families, inclusive of every single kid that comes to the school. Even our kindergartners receive a stock portfolio, receive a bank account, and they do a stock simulation. And then they go and they invest in the live stock market.
Wow. Yeah, I love that, because I think you shared that last time. And the fact that you actually empowering the students and like giving them real life applications. So when you make the distinction between literacy and education, to some it could be semantics, right? You figure like as part of education, you're making them literate. Like if I want to teach my kid to read, they got to be literate. They got to go through literacy courses. But the distinction you make there, I think one thing I heard you call out was that application of it. It says there's one thing to know, is another thing to be able to apply it.
Absolutely.
And so that full sort of wraparound of education is really important. Another thing, go ahead.
I think the other thing too, with financially literate, you can become, excuse me, you can become financially literate without having experiential learning. Mm-hmm. So the full circle of financial education, when you talk education versus literacy, is that you have that experiential component. So someone who's financially literate may have read some really good books, but may not have ever had any experiential learning. So that financial education for our communities is, we're going to teach you the books. However, we're also going to give you that experiential learning to where you're going to dive into a simulation. And we're going to talk about, as opposed to buying a $400 pair of Jordans, buy Nike stock at $125.
Yeah, no, I love that. So it's like you read about interest rates and you can define what it is on a piece of paper. But then when you get into a situation where you're trying to figure out where to put this stack of money, so that I'm getting the biggest return, because I want to keep it as a nest egg, not necessarily to grow from an investment standpoint. You're thinking of online accounts, these credit unions, things of that nature. That's a different level of knowledge and awareness versus you being able to define what debt is and interest rates. And then there's levels to that. So I love the fact that you're getting them in there knee deep, sort of that Montessori model, John Dewey model, just learn by doing. And I love that. That's what it's all about.
And impressing upon individuals that you don't have to be a technician. I'm an everyday investor. There are individuals who are certified financial planners, et cetera. They could break down PE ratios, graphs, and you can have them on this show and me on this show at the same time. And you may ask me a question and I have no idea what the answer is. And they just break down the technical definition. I'm an everyday investor. I do my research on what I know and I stay in my lane and I've been extremely successful at it. So you don't necessarily have to be stone cold and completely financial literate with all of the definitions if you have some experience and you have knowledge of self. And that's what we kind of focus on.
Yeah. And it really brings you back to like, what is the point of education? In any sense, right? It's like, what is the value of education if you can't apply it? And so it's one thing to know is another thing to be able to actually do it and be a practitioner of it. And so knowledge without application in my mind is actually worthless. That's Matt Wagstaff's opinion, but others.
I agree though. I didn't even want to come in and say anything because I totally agree. I agree.
Just to say you know something without being able to apply it, just like, great. All right. So what do we do with that?
It's almost useless, right? The thinker and the doer. The thinker statue is still sitting there and you look over, the doer statue is gone because they're outdoing it.
Absolutely, 100%. Now you need to be able to think, but you also got to get up and move.
Oh, absolutely.
There's another distinction. We talk about finances and financial literacy. I would love your take on is we talk about the financial literacy gap, like the education gap. And then there's also an income gap. And so in my mind, it starts to bring me to, well, how do we close the income gap? Because I feel like there's a skill set or a knowledge transfer that needs to happen to get folks who are disadvantaged in a place where they actually have the money to be able to be even more financially literate about it. And it's kind of like the chicken or the egg too sometimes, because if you are more financially literate and have that education, you can probably earn a little bit more. But I just love your take on that distinction between the income gap and then the literacy education gap.
That's a really good point, Matt. So I recently did a presentation for Women's History Month, and I looked at the statistics that I had never really dove into just on the ignorance of a male, right? It's always coming from my perspective and just doing my teachings and doing my due diligence as far as just putting the information out there. But when I dove into the statistics of what women earn versus men, especially when you dive into Black women specifically, it haunted me to consider putting information out there specifically for women. So when you start talking about that income gap, one of those things that I found was there's an income gap when you talk BIPOC and folks on the margin, people of color, and then you juxtapose that to them actually investing. So you make less money and you invest less. So that's a recipe for disaster. But what I would say is we have to come to the understanding that you have to invest in yourself first with what you can afford to invest in. I'm not going to say Black people. I'm not going to say people of color. I'm just going to say there are folks out there that walk into a store and see things on sale and will go crazy. I just have to get this because it's on sale. Well, the market goes on sale almost once a week when there's a drop in the market and folks don't necessarily go after the market. Mm-hmm. I was reading or purchasing stocks in the stock market, whether it's real estate investment trusts, individual stocks, mutual funds, et cetera. So my push on that income gap and investing is I was looking at something and it was an advertisement for a new platform to purchase stocks on. And it said, you can invest in Tesla as low as $5. Now, me being pragmatic, I said, you can't buy Tesla stock at $5. That was my first, you know, thought when I looked at it. But the point was sharp, right? Like you take that same $5, even though Tesla stock is $400, $500, and you buy a partial share. So although there is an income gap, that shouldn't be an excuse not to take that $5 and start investing in partial shares and understand that compounding is a mean word. Mm. If you're 20 years old and you take $5, $10, $20 and you start buying shares of Apple, which is a dividend stock at $125 when you have an iPhone, you have an iPad, you have a MacBook Pro, you have all these items and you're a consumer and you're not looking to go at Apple, I know you don't necessarily have the income, but buying those partial shares back to compounding, also putting that money back with your dividends as they go back into the account to purchase more stock, we have to use the tools around us. So yes, there is a ton of solutions, a ton of things we can talk about income gaps. We can talk about supremacy culture. We can talk about glass ceilings. We could talk about, again, I spoke about how women are paid so much less. All of those things are true, and those are things that we need to press against. But also, we need to take the systems and the construct that's currently in place and start using some of those to our advantage. Because if I rely on only and strictly my 9-to-5 to build legacy and to make me rich, I'm unsure if it'll actually happen.
Right, right. Well, they say, one income stream is too close to zero. So you don't
that's
like
right.
That's
right. And what my mentor always said to me, he said, regardless of how much your company may be paying you, you need to take some of that money and invest it. So ultimately your investments outweigh that paycheck and one day you can walk away. So even if you are paid $20,000 less than your counterpart, well, let's not compare to your counterpart right now. Let's take a selfish look into what you're doing intrinsically to say, how are you investing? Right. I know we need to have the conversation about income equality, right? However, while we're having that conversation, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We'll have that conversation. We'll push for laws. We'll march. We'll do the things that we need to do. But at the same time, when we get in front of our computer, we need to not only be on Facebook. We need to not only be on Instagram. We need mm-hmm. to be Yahoo Finance, CNBC, and start investing in ourselves.
Yeah, and speaking of Facebook, Facebook's on sale too right now, y'all. So you might want to jump in there before it go back over 300.
Absolutely, but,
This is not financial advice. So this
absolutely not financial advice. However, it's the I say I'm not an expert. I just have experience, and my dollar cost average on Facebook is about $30. So just came from me buying it at $12.
There you go. And so you said some terms. You talked about compounding. You threw out some terms that are that most folks may not know. And so part of their financial education is understanding those terms, the value of compounded interest. You talked about like mutual funds and ETFs and individual stocks. We also, it was another term that we were just discussing. In general, there's some terms that sort of feed into someone being able to understand as a 20-year-old, if I do this, because I'm aware of this other world over here, that my life ultimately becomes better. And then there's also what I was originally getting at around sort of that income gap discussion is really around skill gap. And what I mean is, it seems like there is a shift in, well, not even a shift. I think this has been happening for at least a decade plus in terms of things moving into more of a digital data-driven analytical space. And so those traditional roles, which some may think of traditional roles, may not be there in the future, given that everything's moving into AI, data, analytics. Engineering, I think will always be part of it. I think there's going to be always a space for law and those sort of things. But I think the shift in skill set is definitely going to change. And I don't know about your experience with the students there, but from what I can see is I still see too many of our young people who aren't interested in the maths and sciences, and they get caught up in more of the liberal arts of the world. No knock on liberal arts of the world, but I think that there's a shift where that left brain, really needs to do some work, that logic and understanding that math and science piece. And so when we talk about the ability to earn income, to be able to use that money, it seems like there's going to be a huge skill gap in our communities, and particularly the Black community, if we don't get a handle of that, in addition to, adding the financial components on top of it. I just didn't know what your experiences have been in terms of that skill gap.
Yeah. Going back to supremacy culture, right? So, before I get into that, what I'll say is Legends Charter School, we believe in rigorous liberal arts tied with financial education. And then you choose what you want to do, because college isn't necessarily for every kid, right? Mm-hmm. But if you have some rigorous liberal arts and you have a solid foundation in reading and you take it into math, and your scores are doing well, and then you functionally say, hey, I want to go to college and keep building on this skill, or I came through a legend school and I have $100,000 in my portfolio as a graduating senior and I want to start my own business, we're all for that. Mm. But explicitly for your question regarding the, getting back to the supremacy culture, what I found looking back, I said, as I was growing up, Bennett High School, Seneca High School, I wasn't good in math. And my teachers would send report cards home to talk about me as a student not being good in math. Math is such a general term. There's so many different types of math, right? So ultimately, I ended up great at physics. Mm. I ended up solid at statistics. I was terrible at calc. I never met a double integral in life, right? I was sitting in college and I'm like, this is horrible. I was an electrical engineer, was my track. And I did 5 years on a 4-year program because I was conditioned again with that supremacy culture that you're just not good in math, Shamari. Well, when I switched from electrical engineering to industrial engineering and it fit my personality more, mm-hmm. and I then got into statistics and counting money, mm-hmm. and numbers, it was like, whoa, I'm not bad at math. I was bad at that math, mm. right? I was bad at calculus because it didn't interest me. It didn't make any sense to me. And I just couldn't conceptualize I still to this day couldn't tell you what an integral is. Now, my brother is an electrical engineer doing very well in Houston. Shout out to my brother, Jay. He would probably, punch me for this segment by talking about calculus. But again, my point that I want to underscore is finding the value or finding what you are good at. And then once you find what you're good at and what fits you, you can't allow or you won't allow individuals to tell you flat out, Shamari, you're not good at math. Mm-hmm. No, I wasn't good at calculus, but I'm great with statistics. You want to count some money? Let's do it. You know what I mean? So I think a function of that is when you talk about that skill gap, we can't just force kids into saying, hey, this is what you're going to learn and you have to learn this and this is what's going to make you successful. Mm-hmm. That's one part. Second part is also offering it to them early and often. I took algebra like 1 in high school, senior year, Bennett High School. My daughter is at a school in DC, and she took it I think in seventh grade, maybe even sixth grade.
Wow.
Sixth grade, right? So was there a skill gap, or was it the fact that it just wasn't offered to me soon enough to where my brain was formative enough for me to be able to learn it? I'm in 12th grade right now. I don't care about algebra at this point,
right?
But introducing it to my 13-year-old daughter, my 12-year-old daughter, as a concept that you now need to start taking a look at, knowing and understanding. At that point, she didn't know no better. She came home and said, hey, this is algebra. I said, sixth grade? Seventh grade? But what that does is no one raises to a low bar. Mm-hmm. So when you set the bar high, kids can achieve it. So again, I know I've mentioned supremacy culture a couple of times, and I don't want to be fixated on that, but we know and understand a lot of this was not designed for us to succeed. Mm-hmm. But that's a real story. I took that in 12th grade. My daughter took it in sixth grade. So we have to introduce these topics early on to find out what these kids are going to take to, and then be willing to shift. You're not good in algebra, then let's go to statistics. You're not good in statistics, let's take a look at calculus. Let's find what you thrive in, and let's wrap this around your education, because a lot of the times it's adult-centered, teacher-centered, as opposed to student-centered, and that's a big part of the issue.
Yeah, that's huge. And I think that's a whole nother episode right there around student-centered education and that personalized approach and that differentiation approach to that learning aspect. I mean, that's huge. And I think the same could be applied to adult learners and from a financial literacy standpoint. It's like everybody may not be on the same level, but you can be on some level and evolve through that process. There's no excuse for you not to have some of the basics and or evolve through that process. But you just have to find what works for you. You know, if stocks aren't for you, maybe real estate. If real estate isn't right for you, then maybe you get into the debt market. I don't, whatever it is, there's so many different vehicles for you to be successful in if you sort of dive into it. So you led the conversation around knowledge itself. And I remembered that in the beginning. And so that's a huge aspect of that self-awareness piece. You know, what do you do to kind of like keep you self-aware?
Oh man, talk to my wife and go to counseling.
Right. You know, do what you gotta do.
So one of our mission focus areas at Equity Now is about social and emotional learning, right? So what we talk about is the zones. Are you green? So are you having a good day, or are you red and you're having a bad day, or are you blue and you're a little sad? I think for the culture in the community, as I was growing up, I won't necessarily say now, it was taboo to have conversations about receiving counseling or therapy. I remember watching The Sopranos, and it was a whole episode about them clowning him because he was going to see the therapist. And that was built into the show, right? So when you start having those conversations about knowledge itself, a function of that is hearing from a trained individual, right? Because you can talk yourself to sleep, you can talk yourself to death, but you have to have a trained individual to have those conversations with that can say things back to you and press you on the things that you're going through, regardless of your environment. And what we call that is social and emotional competency that you need to have as a literacy, and you also need to exercise it. Because I'm having a bad day, Matt, I shouldn't make you have a bad day, right? So that knowledge itself is also having individuals around you. I was on an interview, not an interview, I was having a conversation with someone about this CEO peer group. And I was talking about my wife, who's the CEO of Legends. And she asked the individual I was talking to about decision-making. And I said, my wife and I are dynamically different quite often in how we think. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, right? However, knowledge itself, I go into her office even when it's uncomfortable to hear the things that I don't necessarily want to hear, because I already have a decision that I want to make, but I'll go in and use her as a sounding board to ask the question, knowing that it's going to be likely I'm going to hear something that I don't want to hear. So knowledge itself doesn't mean in the sense that you know yourself and you act in according to how you always feel you should. You have to get feedback. Feedback is a gift. And that's the only way that you're going to improve by is by getting feedback. And if you're not uncomfortable with that feedback sometimes, then you're not growing. You're doing the exact same thing. And in doing the exact same thing, expecting a different result, we know that's the definition of insanity. So the only other thing I would add is I've been on this lately, and my wife laughs. She when she hears this, she's gonna laugh because she's already gonna know what's coming out. This whole humility thing is something for me. I am not a fan of this new wave of shush, be humble, right? God wasn't humble. Jesus wasn't humble. Jesus told his message to everybody, and we know how that story ended and how well and what it did for us, right? If you're a believer. If not, let me bring it away from religion. That humility piece, humility and arrogant, it's not antithetical, right? So just because you're not humble doesn't mean you're not arrogant. I mean, doesn't mean that you're arrogant. And sometimes you have to toot your own horn so there's music. Now, that doesn't mean that you go and you boast in people's face and you're over the top and you're ridiculous, but you have to have a level of self-confidence to get out of the gate to do some things. And I find oftentimes the children who are very confident in themselves, very vocal, they have their own opinions, they're extremely confident, they're quickly labeled as bad kids, and they're not humble. And I think we need to separate that. I don't think that should equate. Again, hear me clearly. I'm not saying don't be humble, because humility is necessary. You and I have known each other for years. I've done literally hundreds of podcasts, but I'm nervous every time before the recording button starts to do my podcast, to talk to you. That's humility, right? The nerves is the humility, right? So I'm not saying don't be humble, but I'm also saying that let's not use humility to dampen people's light, to dim people's shine.
No, I get that. I think that fits in huge with terms of finances and that the conversations we have around finances. We want to be extremely humble, even if we're doing well to a certain extent, and we won't be able to. And so we don't feel like we could share our successes because we want to come off as being humble. I think that it is a skill. And so from a liberal arts standpoint, bringing that back to that conversation, being able to communicate effectively is a huge aspect of this whole discussion. And so a part of communication is that listening component, as well as the verbalization of it, but then being aware of your surroundings and that emotional intelligence piece of it. So you can be extremely confident, but just be aware of how that's being received by others, and whether or not you take it is on you, but the awareness is important. And so I remember,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Brother Polite was just talking about that the other day. I don't know if you saw the video from him. He was talking about humility and the lowering of yourself. And he was like, I don't want to lower myself. Like, why would I want to lower myself?
Right. Makes no sense.
And
that's why we teach in combination the social emotional learning, right? Because if you have high EI, right, your emotional intelligence is high and you're in tune with social emotional learning, then if your lack of humility is teetering towards arrogance and it's making someone feel a certain way, now you have to say, hey, this is not right, right? Like, I'm making someone feel bad. Mm-hmm. And now it's a problem. And my example is I met my mentor because I was with the Black MBAs in Rochester, and they hired me to do this, to do all the technology for this event that they had. And my mentor, he was like, listen, all these people on stage, they want to sell you something. I don't. He said, the only thing I want to sell you is the dream that you can be great. And folks were looking at him like, it touched me in a different way. He wasn't being disrespectful. He was just telling his story from an extremely confident perspective. Mm-hmm. And now, oh my goodness, that was, oh my goodness, I don't even, 20 years ago almost now, he is a large function of the success that I'm achieving now, because he wasn't necessarily lowering himself with humility, but he also wasn't being arrogant, which was attractive to me to go have the conversation and not be nervous to say, hey, I liked a lot of what you said. Can you mentor me?
Yeah. You just never know who your message is going to resonate with. So just be you, right? And again, I like to say, do whatever you want to do. Just don't do it at the expense of other people, right? This don't
Absolutely.
Hurt, this don't hurt anybody in the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't ever put anybody down for you to come up. That's the worst. And that's definitely not what I'm speaking of. My whole purpose, I was asked the question, what is my greatest fear? And I said, I think about my tombstone. And my greatest fear is not honoring those who held the ladder of success tight for me to walk up while they sacrificed their own leadership, learning, the ability to earn more while I came up that ladder, right? So it's all about not being selfish, but being selfless. And I want to do as much as I can to ensure that my children, which is inclusive of the local community, are building wealth. And wealth doesn't just equal money, because we hear wealth and we just think about how much money can I get? No, 100%. Wealth is love. Wealth is kindness. Wealth is peace. Wealth is serenity. Like that's what I want for individuals to have.
I love that. I love that. And that analogy around the ladder. I mean, I'm using that one too, just by the way. I'm just going to borrow that from you. I'll send you a check in the mail once I use it a couple of times. You get royalties on that one.
No doubt. I appreciate it. No doubt.
I love that analogy because it's so true. It is so true. I can just envision that right now, somebody holding the ladder while we're walking. And they can't, they're not necessarily getting on the ladder, but they're holding it down for us. So that's
absolutely
that's huge.
Absolutely. And I had a lot of people in my life that did that for me. No man stands on an island alone. And I'm a product of that. My success is not just Shamari Akil James. There are many contributors to the individual that you see here speaking to you today.
Love that. And so you talked about professionals. And so whether it's a therapist, a coach, a consultant, whomever it is helping you out, let's transition to sort of like the personally, just to wrap up for the day. When you think about some of your habits and routines that you've learned either through their conversations with professionals or just through life in general, some of your financial or some of your education habits that help you to develop or continue to grow in your financial literacy and education, you know, what are some of those things that you may do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, maybe one or two things or more if you want, that you do that others may want to consider as they're trying to develop their education and their awareness?
Good question. So not to say that I started out doing this, but in hindsight now, practicing what I preach, if you take a look at almost any business, right, there's a business plan that has mission, vision, and core values. Right? Almost every business you run across in some semblance, some way, shape, or form. Why is that not naturally applicable to our everyday walks of life? So for me, what's my financial mission statement? What are my financial core values? What are the things that I'm going to wake up and look forward to from that fiscal perspective? So it's a guiding light for me. It's my due north. It's my true north. So what I do now, what I went back and did, 1999 is when I started investing in the market, but I didn't really know what I was doing for real. Then once I finally got good at it and had some maturity, I went back and said, here is my financial mission statement. Here is what I want to accomplish. And in short, it's breaking generational bonds and providing wealth for those for myself and those around me, again, which is inclusive of my family and my local community. So everything that I do or that I try to do comes right back to that mission, comes right back to that. So if it's anything that may even remotely seem selfish or against my values, I drop it immediately, which is why folks can bring to me certain things, like what's the most recent one? Dogecoin. There are some folks who made tons of money in Dogecoin. I feel great. I'm fine. I didn't make a dime from Dogecoin, and I'm happy for those who have and who does, but my piece is that that's not within my financial mission statement. So I'm okay. I don't feel that I missed out. So that's at a 50,000 foot level, right? But create, what are your core values? What's your mission statement for whatever that daily walk of life you want to apply it to, your marriage, financial, your education, et cetera. From a pragmatic standpoint, there's A couple of things that I do when I wake up, my mom would pop me if I didn't give thanks that I was able to wake up today, dear Lord, because some people did not. Then maybe unfortunately or fortunately, I grab myself, I probably kiss my wife, but then grab my cell phone, check the weather, and then I go through my finances. It drives my wife crazy because then I'll have all of these questions about everything that has hit my account.
You too? I was like, what was this $33.47 for?
Literally, literally at 6 o'clock in the morning. At 6 o'clock in the morning, bro.
Target again? What did we get this from Target? What happened? What was this?
I'm like, what is this recurring? I seen it last month, but it's here this month. What is this now?
Right.
But not to get too deep into what mine are, but I say that to say, what are your habits that are your healthy habits that you do over and over and over, right? So I am obsessed again with ensuring that I have and leave legacy and leave legacy for my children and those around me. So that wealth building are deposits, small deposits. So the small things that you do, even though they're small, they add up to greatness. So I would say a lot of those are just my habits. And the one is give time for yourself, man, regardless of what you may be doing or what it is that you like. But the things that cause you stress or that cause you angst, what I do, I'll tell you, I come home, I eat dinner with my family. We have some wine and it's a great time. But I'm quick to go up to my room, sit in my sitting room, turn the TV on and watch Arrows, the latest thing that I've been watching. And that's my time. Mm-hmm. That's my me time. And that allows me to refresh. When I may not be feeling well because I'm mentally tired, I lay down, I put the Calm app on, the ocean waves, and I just lay there. And then mm-hmm. what I find, that refresher, it brings out robust ideas that I can just jot down. So you have to really find what works for you. It used to be for me, maybe TMI, that my best ideas came in the shower. Like I'll be like, oh, washing right. My hair.
Yes. You
know what I mean? So my recommendation, my humble recommendation is you find that time, that downtime for yourself and knowing yourself. And again, not something that someone necessarily recommends to you, but what you find peace and comfort in. That TV show for me equals me doing absolutely nothing with my brain except watching that dumb TV show, right? And then that allows me to refresh. So mm-hmm. I would make the recommendation that people find what that is for themselves and be able to refresh, renew, and come back strong.
I love that. I love that. And so from what I just heard, kind of there's like three buckets of things that I've heard. And correct me if I'm missing one of them. But one is have a North Star. So have a plan. Right. And something that's some guardrails that's going to keep you sort of in line with what is important to you. Again, knowing yourself. And then secondly, is checking in. And so, you know, being active in terms of like actually seeing what's going on. So when you're checking in on your accounts, and it keeps you keeps it top of mind and you're aware of what's going on. And then three is just refresh and knowing yourself enough to know when you need to recharge. And so, you know, I think those are phenomenal just reminders every day that everybody should definitely consider. You know, when you wake up in the morning, like what's your goal? What's the guiding? What's your principles? Are you living those principles? How will you live those principles? Checking in, making sure that things are out of whack and still moving the line. And if you have questions, like you say, ask the question and then check in and then refresh. So I love those. Those are excellent, excellent principles and great advice and guidance.
Appreciate it. And the as we close, the last thing that I would leave with you, I'm an engineer, so it comes off really probably much more simple than it is. And I say simple, not easy, because those are different. It's simple steps, but it's not easy to do.
Right.
But what gets measured makes progress. It's as simple as that. What you put down on paper and you start to pay attention to and monitor and measure, mm-hmm. it will make progress, whether it's your finances, whether it's your business, whether it's your weight, whether it's your relationships. If you jot down what I call KPIs, key performance indicators, to say, hey, I'm going to do this by this time, and you measure it, what gets measured makes progress. It will get better.
100%. 100%. Great way to end it. And so with that being said, Shamari, so how can anyone reach you again? Any new contact information, or just any contact information that you can provide?
For sure. On social media, I am at Shamari_A_James. That's my Instagram. I'm at ShamariJames.com. I'm at EquityNowInc.org. Or you could just put Shamari A. James in Google. I Google myself just to see what comes up every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm on LinkedIn, Legends Charter School, LegendsPublicCharterSchool.org.
No, I appreciate you. Great conversation. I love it. A lot of good nuggets as always. You might want to repeat this one at least twice to make sure you don't miss one of those nuggets. And still, we're going to go back to that $30 million bond deal. So we're going to talk about that next time.
I'm game. We should talk about it because I had never heard anything like that until I did.
Yes. It's bonds have been, the bond deals have been around forever, but not in our communities. And so,
exactly.
Definitely something for us to learn. I appreciate you as always, brother. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I appreciate you. Thank you for having me, man. And keep up the good work, brother.
I'll do my best.
All right.
All right.
Bye now.
Hi again. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to another episode of the Live Long and Prosper podcast. As always, I hope that this podcast is adding a tremendous amount of value to you, your loved ones, and the community at large. Please, if you have not done so already, remember to subscribe to this podcast just to make sure you get all the latest notifications when we have a new episode. And if this is adding value to your life, as we hope it is, please share it with as many people as you think it will serve. Until the next time, everyone, live long and prosper.